If your vibe is the earlier the better, Lowe's early Black Friday deals are a no-brainer. Get up to 35% off select major appliances, and rewards members get free delivery, haul-away, basic installation, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 11/4. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change. LG member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Auto Parts.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Your Honor, I'd like to hand the witness this document and leave it there. I have an extra copy. I have no problem with him referring to it. Once you've had a chance to review that, Lieutenant, if you look up at me when you're done.
All set, sir.
So you'd agree with me that the 2:32 p.m. phone call with Lieutenant Tully is in the Daily Journal, correct?
Yes, it is.
And the 2:53 p.m. alert by Sergeant Simpson is also in the journal, correct?
Yes, it is.
Both of those have a timestamp, do they not?
They do, sir.
What is the next entry on that journal?
It says, "Sir, activated en route to Canton."
Now, there is no time entry next to that. I'm sorry. No time is entered next to that entry, correct?
There is not, no.
The previous alert said only to clear the vehicles and driveways, essentially, right? To check on availability?
Correct, sir.
So the time that your team is alerted was entered in the journal, but there is no time entered in this journal as to when you were dispatched, correct?
Correct, sir.
But you have a memory of after that 2:53 p.m. alert sent out by Sergeant Simpson that Lieutenant Tully called you back about an hour later?
It's not a memory, sir. Our alert for the team to respond is timestamped at 3:48 p.m.
Okay, and that was Sergeant Simpson that recorded that, correct?
Correct, sir.
But that's not in the Daily Journal, correct?
No, that's in the Health and Homeland Alert Network, which records all our alerts that get sent out. And that was timestamped at 3:48.
3:48, okay. Now, other than authorization that would have been obtained after the 2:53 p.m. alert, did you ever ascertain what else changed on the part of the Norfolk State Police Detective Unit that allowed you now to have the green light?
Once I was done cleaning my driveway off, which took a significant amount of time, I spoke to my captain. He said we were approved on through our chain of command, and that's when either I contacted Lieutenant Tully or he called me. He said he was approved through his chain of command to include the deputy superintendent who was authorizing a response.
Okay.
So there's several layers of the chain of command that have to approve a response for numerous reasons. Staffing reasons, they know I'm going to be pulling, again, I said some of my team members aren't full-time members. Some of them I have to pull off their assignments. So if they're on patrol, I'll now be shorting a barracks. They take that into consideration, overtime consideration, safety consideration of now additional members driving through the weather to respond. So that all gets discussed at levels above us.
All right. That answer applied to strictly issues regarding authorization on both ends, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. You recall my question, which was, other than authorization, did you learn what, if anything, had changed in that time period from 2:53 p.m. to 3:48 p.m. on the part of the Norfolk State Police Detectives Unit?
No, sir. We just talked about the authorization process.
Sometime shortly before 4 o'clock, you're talking about 3:48 being the alert authorizing you to depart. Sometime before 4, Sergeant Simpson informed your team to start heading to Canton and to report to you, correct?
Correct, sir.
That meant that team members should basically stop what they're doing, the ones who are going to be going, get their gear ready, suit up, get in a car, and start driving to Canton to meet up with you, correct?
Correct, sir.
And we've already discussed that on this particular day with blizzard conditions and the roads as they existed, that would obviously take more time than it would on a clear sunny day, correct?
Correct, sir.
And I believe your estimation is maybe about a 20-minute drive in good weather with good roads versus the 43 minutes it actually took you to get there, correct?
Correct.
Now, the seven members of your team who did show up were Bearden, Beausoleil, Carrier, Louise, O'Brien, you, and Viscardi, correct?
Correct, sir.
You all arrived at about the same time, sir?
No, we had a pretty significant difference between arrival times.
Okay. Is there something called a personnel status report that records arrival times, sir?
No, it doesn't record arrival times. We just enter who's responding. We use our geotab, which is our vehicle locator, to determine arrival times.
Is it your testimony? Let's get back to the podium. Is it your testimony that the personnel status report does not record the date and time that somebody arrived on scene?
No, that's all manually entered, sir.
Do you deny that the personnel status report in this case recorded the date and time of each of those officers that I just mentioned who came on scene?
It has who arrived on scene, yes, sir.
But it doesn't just say who arrived on scene. The personnel status report says when they arrived on scene, correct?
Yeah, it's whenever they would have been entered into the system. But that doesn't mean they were officially on scene yet,
all
sir.
Right, but again, that's not what the document says, right? It doesn't say we're entering this into the system because they're arriving. The document says on scene, and it gives a date and time. Does it not?
Yes, it does, sir.
All right. Now, your testimony is, oh, and by the way, the personnel status report, you'd agree with me, has everybody except for you and Beausoleil showing up at 5 p.m. on January 29th of 2022, does it not?
Yes, it does, sir.
And it has you and Beausoleil showing up 5 minutes before that at 4:55 p.m. on January 29th, correct?
Correct.
But it's your testimony that when you got there, it was just you and Beausoleil, correct?
Correct, sir.
Which actually would be consistent with the personnel status report, right?
Yes, sir.
Because that has you two showing up first as well, right?
Yes, sir.
And then your testimony is that other members didn't show up until between 5:20 and 5:24 p.m.?
Trooper Bearden arrived at 5:21. Sergeant Luis and Sergeant O'Brien arrived at 5:24. Trooper Viscardi showed up at 5:34. Sergeant Carrier showed up at 5:41.
Okay, and so the last member of your team, which is again, Carrier?
Carrier, correct, sir, 541.
He showed up at 541, and now your team was all there, correct?
Yes, sir.
So is it your testimony that you did not meet up as a team somewhere and head to 34 Fairview? You all arrived individually?
That's correct, sir.
Did every single trooper who arrived have their own cruiser?
Yes, they did, sir.
All right. Now, you would agree with me that when Lieutenant Tully first contacted you at 2:32 p.m., it was still daytime, correct?
Yes, it was.
So it was light out, correct?
Yes, sir.
You'd agree with me that at around 5 o'clock on this late January day in Massachusetts, it was dark out by the time you got there, correct?
Yes, it was.
So when you finally arrived on scene after getting your team getting the green light, it was dark for the start of your search, correct?
Yes, it was.
When you got there, you set up a command post.
Well, you could call my cruiser command post, sure, sir.
Well, I didn't use the term command post, sir, did I?
You did not.
Who used it first?
We marked my cruiser as a command post on the map, sir.
Okay, all right. And a command post is a base of operations at the scene, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you parked your cruiser basically in front of the driveway at 34 Fairview to serve as the command post?
Yes, right side of the driveway, yes, sir.
All right. And you were initially facing away from the flagpole when you did that?
Yes, sir.
Which would mean that your cruiser was parked technically on the wrong side of the street facing Cedar Crest because you were against 34 Fairview?
Correct, sir.
And then ultimately turned it around?
Well, yes. Myself and Trooper Boussole moved our vehicles.
All right. And you initially parked there in part because you wanted to keep the area where you were searching clear of vehicles, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that was where you met at the, we'll call it a command post because you did, your cruiser. That was where you met to discuss the parameters of the search?
When Detective Lieutenant Tully arrived on scene, that's where we spoke.
Okay. And you would agree with me that it was Lieutenant Tully from the Norfolk State Police Detectives Unit who told you where to look and what to look for, correct?
Correct. He told us the area he thought would be the best probability to find what we were looking for.
In addition to your team, the seven of you, you noted that there were five other officers on scene at various points, correct?
Yeah, I believe it was about five, sir.
They were all in uniform?
They were not.
Some were in plain clothes?
They were.
And you didn't know who those five other officers were, correct?
I only recognized two of them, sir.
And so the other three, you didn't know if they were state police or Canton police?
Correct, sir.
At that point, were you made aware that the Canton police had been conflicted out of this investigation?
I had not, no, sir.
All right, now, Lieutenant Tully directed you to an area where he said that John O'Keefe's body was found, correct?
He directed us to where he believed the vehicle involved had been parked and to where the victim's body was recovered.
All right, so again, in answer to my question, he did direct you to an area where he believed the victim's body was found, correct?
Yes, sir.
And he told you that he believed that the victim officer was hit and dragged by a motor vehicle, correct?
Yeah, I believe he might have said possibly dragged.
All right, but in terms of your paperwork on the case, there's something called a final mission report, correct?
Yes, there is, sir.
And what is the final mission report?
That's just a brief summary of the actions conducted by CERT during our assignment.
And with regard to, just going back for a second, with regard to those five officers, you mentioned that you recognized two of the five officers that were in plain clothes at the scene?
Correct, sir.
And what departments were they from?
The only two I recognized were from the state police.
Okay. Now, getting back to the final mission report, You called it a brief summary of what you had done with regard to the search, correct?
Yes, sir.
Just because it's brief doesn't mean that it should be inaccurate, correct?
Correct, sir.
It's important with regard to anything that you submit on this case that you be as accurate as possible, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you try to be, correct?
Do our best, sir.
Right. And there is an entry, there are six different categories seven different categories on the final mission report. The first being the mission name, which you entered as the Canton Evidence Search, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that was accurate. The evidence search occurred, and it occurred in Canton, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you also put the date and time of the first call, and you entered that as January 29th of 2022 at 2:32 p.m., correct?
Yes, sir.
And that was accurate because you've testified that's when Lieutenant Tully contacted you, correct?
Yes, sir.
And there's a entry or a question or a box that says general terrain. And you entered that as neighborhood, snow-covered street, and front lawn, correct?
Correct, sir.
And that was accurate, right?
Yes, sir.
And in terms of incident type, you entered evidence search, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that was accurate. Correct?
Yes, sir.
And then there's a final mission report that talks about your mission and starts with, seven CERT members, and that's the CERT team, right?
Yes, sir.
Seven CERT members responded to the scene, and it talks about, the snow in the area where the victim's body was found, the plows hadn't cleared the street, et cetera, et cetera. That paragraph is accurate as well, correct?
Yes, it is, sir.
And then there's a final mission report by, and it gives your name, Lieutenant Kevin O'Hara, and it has your accurate badge number, which is 3042, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Everything in that we've just discussed in terms of what you put in your final mission report was entered accurately, correct?
Yes, sir.
And the final category is general description of mission. And would you agree with me that you entered the off-duty officer was hit and dragged by a vehicle at approximately 12:30 a.m.
I don't remember exactly how it's worded, sir. If I could...
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
It's been a recurring theme. Do you need...
I do not.
Glasses?
I do not, sir.
All right. I'm sorry.
Thank you, sir.
All set, sir. Thank you.
I may approach.
Yes.
Lieutenant, having read that portion of the final mission report, is your memory refreshed?
Yes, it is, sir.
All right. And did you enter in there the off-duty officer was hit and dragged by a vehicle at approximately 12:30 a.m.?
Yes, it is. I did, sir.
All right. Now, with regard to the area that, or I should say, Lieutenant Tully's direction to you to search the area where the victim's body was found, Lieutenant Tully never informed you that he was actually present and saw the victim's body in that spot, did he?
He did not, no, sir.
Did you mark the place where John O'Keefe's body was found with GPS coordinates?
We did not. He wasn't no longer on scene, sir, so I think that would have been not 100% accurate.
Okay. You also mentioned that Lieutenant Tully directed you to the area where the SUV had been parked, correct?
To where the vehicle was believed to have been parked, yes, sir.
All right. At that time, did you know it was an SUV or not?
I did not, sir.
All right. But in any case, Lieutenant Tully didn't tell you that he ever saw the vehicle parked in the area to which he directed you, correct?
He did not say that he saw it there, no, sir.
So Lieutenant Tully told you to look for a man's sneaker, correct?
That was one of the items missing, yes, sir.
And he told you to look for red and clear plastic pieces of taillight, correct?
He just said taillight, didn't say red clear, but taillight pieces.
Okay. Did Lieutenant Tully give you approval not just to search outside the house, but also inside the house?
No, we never discussed searching inside the house, sir.
And you had mentioned during your testimony that you confirmed that the homeowner was there, right? Because he came out of the house at one point?
I don't know if it was the homeowner, but an adult male exited the house while we were there, sir.
Sure. And he appeared to live at that home, correct? Let me just have a moment. All right. Now, with regard to the area that you were searching, you would agree with me that Lieutenant Tully was the one who directed you where to search and what to search for, correct?
He gave us the best idea for the search area, yes, sir.
All right. And it was based on his direction that you created a grid and began your search.
He told us where he believed the vehicle was parked and where the victim's body was found, and I decided how far of a distance we would search.
Okay. So that's another way of saying it was based on his direction that you created a grid and began your search, correct?
Yeah, I based it off of the information he provided, yes, sir.
So the answer is yes?
I guess so, sir.
This was not the first time that you and your team have done a search in the snow, correct?
Not for evidence. We had never done a search like this before, just for missing person searches.
I see. But in any case, you've been trained to search winter crime scenes that have snow, correct?
Correct, sir.
There are proper techniques for conducting such searches during or after a snowfall, correct?
Yeah, we have best practices we use.
I'm sorry, I didn't
hear. Yes, we have best practices we use, sir.
Of course. Best practices would include documenting the scene and the area to be searched with photographs and diagrams, correct?
Yes, sir.
It would also include using, you know, gentle methods to remove snow, correct?
Yeah, the best way you can, yes, sir.
That might include, you know, smaller hand tools, brushes, gloved hands?
Only if you would have a real small area.
It would include removing snow layer by layer and then sifting it and documenting evidence again for each layer that's removed?
Yeah, I believe that's how we went through, sir. We went slowly, methodically, and sifting through the snow as we progressed down the area, correct.
And best practices would mean documenting by photographs along the way the progress of your search, would it not?
That would be up to the detectives or the crime scene unit, sir.
Well, but you were the one who was making those decisions, correct?
Not for documentation purposes. No, that's not our responsibility, sir.
Okay. But you would agree with me that it would be advisable to document your search in that way, would it not?
That would be at the discretion of the detective, sir.
Okay. Well, would it harm your search in any way to fully document it along the way?
It would not harm it, no, sir.
You want to take your time and work methodically and thoroughly in the search, correct?
Correct, sir.
And you want to collect evidence as it's located and immediately photograph it in place before it's disturbed, correct?
Yeah, as evidence is discovered, it will get photographed in place, yes, sir.
During your search in this case, your team found a sneaker and pieces of red and clear plastic, correct?
Correct, sir.
The evidence that you found was basically on top of each other, within a few inches of each other, correct?
Within a foot or two, a couple feet, yes, sir.
Well, you testified at a prior proceeding in this matter, did you not?
I did, sir.
And you were sworn to tell the truth during that prior proceeding as well, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that testimony was closer in time to the search that you conducted on January 29th than today is, correct?
Yes, it was, sir.
And your memory would have been better then than it is today, correct?
Probably, sir.
You were asked the question, quote, "And as far as the red and clear glass you believed consistent with the taillight, was that found in the same area as the sneaker or somewhere else?" Do you recall that question?
I believe being asked that question, yes, sir.
And your answer was same area within a few inches, less than a foot, correct?
Correct, sir.
Now, you mapped out GPS coordinates for what you found?
One of the team members did, yes, sir.
Your team did?
Yes, sir.
And Lieutenant Tully from the Norfolk State Police Detective Unit was present during the search, correct?
Yes, he was.
And he was the one that was photographing the items that were found?
Yes, he did.
So I'd like to ask you a few questions about your observations about where these items were found in relation to each other. Was there a piece of red plastic located on the roadway left of the flagpole when you look at the house from the street?
Left of the flagpole, yes, sir.
All right. Now, given your testimony about these items essentially being in the same area less than a foot away from each other, it could not be true then that from that red piece of plastic that was found in the street, that 3 feet south of that was a black Nike sneaker found under the snow. That couldn't have happened, correct?
Well, I don't know where the distance between the objects as far as the mapping purposes, sir, but as far as how far apart, the first thing we discovered was one red piece of plastic, and then further south, that's when we found the sneaker and additional pieces.
Right, but again, they were all in the same area less than a foot apart, correct?
The same general area, but it could have been over a foot, sir. I'd have to measure between the GPS markings.
Okay, well, so is your testimony today that what you testified to in that prior proceeding, where everything was less than a foot apart, that wasn't accurate?
Objection.
Allow it. Is that your testimony, sir?
Best recollection that they were within around a foot, but to be 100% accurate, you would have to measure between the two GPS points, which I have not done.
Sure, but if your estimate is they were, you didn't even say a foot, you said less than a foot, correct?
I believe that's what you read around a foot, yes, sir.
Which is what you testified to, correct?
Correct, sir.
So if it's less than a foot, then by definition, the sneaker couldn't have been found 3 feet south of where that red piece of plastic was, correct?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's accurate, sir.
You don't know what's accurate?
Well, you're saying 3 feet. I don't know if that's accurate, sir.
No, that's what I'm asking you. Is it accurate?
I don't know, sir. I'm not sure the exact distance. I didn't measure the GPS marking, sir.
All right.
I don't know. I didn't know where you came up with that number 3 feet, sir.
I'm just asking questions.
Okay.
I'm just asking questions. All right. So with regard to, let's assume for a moment that the sneaker was found 3 feet south of that first red piece of plastic. From your observations, was there a clear piece of plastic that was found a few feet south of that black sneaker?
There was a piece of clear plastic found just past the sneaker.
A few feet south of the sneaker?
I don't know where you're getting that from, sir.
Again, you don't have to, worry where my questions are coming
from. So, Mr. Iannetti, no comments. Next question.
I'm just asking a factual question. You were there. I was not.
Mr. Iannetti, just ask the question.
Was a clear piece of plastic found a few feet south of the black sneaker, which was found 3 feet south of the red piece of plastic? Did that happen?
I don't know the distance, sir. No. Not without measuring it, but I wouldn't think it was that far of a distance. They were much closer than that.
Right. I mean, you say you don't know the distance, but you testified to what the distance was in that prior proceeding, did you not?
Objection.
Next question, please.
All right. And then, moving along, we have the red piece of plastic, 3 feet south, black sneaker, a few feet south, clear plastic, then finally, several feet south of that clear piece of plastic, was there a second piece of red plastic found, several feet south?
No, again, I don't agree with your description of the distance, sir.
Okay. All right. So we will agree that, one piece of red plastic, 3 feet south sneaker, a few feet south clear piece of plastic, and then several feet south more red plastic. That didn't happen, correct?
I don't agree on those distances, no, sir.
No. Okay. Now, you testified that these items were buried under some snow, correct?
Correct, sir, they were under snow.
May I have those exhibits, please? Can I display exhibit 113, please?
All right. We need the jury needs to take a break. Why don't we
Sure.
Why don't we have this be our morning assessment? So take about 15, 20.
All rise for the court, please.
Thank you. Be seated. Go to the back of the table.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Ms. Tinetti, you can go back to the podium.
Thank you, Robert. Lieutenant O'Hara, you testified on direct examination that you collected 6 or 7 pieces of plastic, correct?
I believe that's what we found, yes, sir.
Would you agree with me that it's important to be precise in your investigation and your search?
Yes, why Lieutenant Tully took an evidence log, sir.
So as you testify here today, 2.5 years later, can you tell the jury whether it was 6 or 7 of the pieces of plastic that you actually found?
I've never seen the evidence log from that night, sir, so I'm not sure exactly how many he recovered. Again, I was partaking in the search, so I'm not sure what the exact number is, sir.
And you would agree with me that you only mapped 3 of them on the map that was introduced here at trial, correct?
Correct.
And again, that was because the pieces were essentially on top of each other, correct?
Correct. As you would mark them on the GPS, they were marking almost directly on top of each other, and we knew that was going to...
And they certainly were not being marked feet away from each other, several feet, correct?
No, sir.
All right. And you are aware that Lieutenant Tully photographed 5 pieces of plastic that day, are you not?
I'm not sure. I'd never seen the photos until probably about a week ago, sir.
All right. In any case, you did say to the State Police Detective Unit at the end of this search that if they wanted you and your team to come back out during daylight hours, you would, correct?
Correct, sir.
So I'd like to direct your attention to six specific dates, and then I'll ask you a question. February 3rd, February 4th, February 8th, February 10th, February 11th, and February 18th. Those six dates. And my question is, did the lead investigator, Trooper Michael Proctor, ever call you on one of those six dates to come back to the scene to conduct a further search?
No, he did not.
I have nothing further.
Okay. Redirect, Mr. Lally.
Just briefly, Your Honor.
So, Lieutenant O'Hara, with respect to both yourself and Lieutenant Tully, as far as being dispatched, that decision comes from above both of your heads with respect to each of your units. Is that fair to say?
That's correct, sir.
Now, you were asked some questions about a daily journal. Can you describe for the jury sort of what that is or what kind of information would typically be kept in that?
That would just be our day-to-day activities. We'll give a quick gist of what we're doing each day. Be more general than not, doesn't get too thorough.
Now, you had made mention during your testimony of some other documentation that would be more specific. Is that correct?
Correct, sir.
And what would some of those be, and how would that be more specific?
That's a report that gets generated through our mission manager software, so it creates a little bit more detailed response.
And are you familiar with an AVL?
I am, yes, sir.
And what is an AVL?
It's the Geotab GPS on the cruiser's automatic vehicle locator system.
And the vehicle that you were operating that day, was that equipped with an AVL?
Yes, it was, sir.
And is that how you're able to tell the precise time of your arrival on scene?
Correct, sir.
As well as each member of your unit, is that correct?
Correct, sir.
Now, as far as the items and where they were, again, I just asked from the photographs that were marked as exhibits before, where the items were when they were located by members of your team, they were photographed as they lay, is that correct?
Correct, sir. As they were discovered, they were photographed.
So regardless of inches versus feet versus whatever distance it was, you didn't measure that, is that correct?
We did not, no, sir.
But as far as where they were actually discovered or where they were recovered, they were photographed where they were when you found, correct?
Correct, sir.
Nothing further.
All right. All right, Lieutenant, you are all set, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank I appreciate you. It. I need this journal back.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Iannetti, this is your paperwork, I believe.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Lally, your next witness, please.
Yes, Your Honor. The Commonwealth call Ms. Maureen Hartnett to the stand.
Step right up here and just watch your step for me.
Can you tell me, sir, the evidence of the court and sharing the case down here into the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God?
Yes.
Morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
Could you please state your name and spell your last name for the jury?
Maureen Hartnett, Hartnett.
All right, Ms. Hartnett, I know I'm going to ask you throughout this to keep your voice up, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
And Ms. Hartnett, what do you do for work?
I'm a forensic scientist, too, with the Criminalistics Unit and Crime Scene Response Unit at the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory.
And how long in total have you been with the Massachusetts State Police Crime Lab?
In total, approximately 8 years.
And I'm going to ask you some questions just a little bit about your educational background. Where did you go as far as your undergraduate was concerned?
I have a Bachelor of Science in Biology from Bridgewater State University.
And following receipt of that degree, where did you go from there?
I have a Master of Science in Forensic Science from the University of New Haven.
And after you received your master's, where did you go after that?
I was then hired by the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory.
And when you're initially hired, you mentioned that you're a forensic scientist too now, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
So when you're initially hired, or when you were initially hired at the State Crime Lab, what was your position and what did that entail?
Are you referring to back in 2004 or am I current hire?
You're back in 2004.
In 2004, I was originally hired as a temporary employee in the CODIS unit.
And what is it that you did there?
I collected blood samples for the DNA database.
And did you receive any sort of training in regard to that work?
Yes, I was trained on how to properly collect and seal those samples.
And what did training sort of consist of in reference to that?
I was I demonstrated being able to take those collections and then properly store them and seal them.
Now, your current position, what is your position at the crime lab now?
Currently, I'm a forensic scientist too in the criminalistics unit and crime scene response units.
And what is sort of the difference between a forensic scientist two versus a forensic scientist one?
A forensic scientist one is still in training at the crime lab.
And did you start as a forensic scientist one when you came into this particular unit?
Yes, I did.
And about how long a period or process is it from the time that you start as a forensic scientist one before you become a forensic scientist?
It took me approximately 9 to 10 months to be signed off to be a forensic scientist two.
And can you explain to the jury sort of what goes on as far as that process is concerned, going from a forensic scientist one to a forensic scientist two?
During that time period, we are being trained in the various types of analysis that we'll perform in the criminalistics unit.
And what exactly does that training sort of consist of?
The training is broken up into modules, which addresses each type of analysis. At the end of each module, we take a written exam, an oral exam, and a hands-on practical exam. Once each module is successfully completed, we'll move on to the next module.
And what are your duties as a forensic scientist in the criminalistics unit and the crime scene response unit?
In the criminalistics unit, I examine items of evidence submitted by law enforcement personnel or crime scene responders for the presence of biological fluids such as blood, semen, and saliva, as well as trace materials such as hairs and fibers. I also perform gunshot residue collection and damage analysis.
And with respect to the crime scene response unit?
For the crime scene response unit, I respond to crime scenes. I document crime scenes, analyze or test evidence, preserve the evidence, and then transport that evidence back to the crime lab.
And now, with reference to your training experience, specifically in the crime scene response unit, what is, based on your training experience, what is sort of the definition of what is a crime scene?
A crime scene is any location that may contain evidence related to a crime.
Now, with regard to those two positions, what, if any, training did you receive in regard to those two units that you're currently in while you were at the lab?
Are you speaking about the crime scene training specifically?
Crime scene training, yes. Let me ask you first to start with the criminalistics training.
The criminalistics training, I completed modules on body fluid identification, such as blood and semen, trace analysis, identification of hairs and fibers, pattern evidence, such as blood stain pattern evidence, as well as damage analysis.
And as far as the training was concerned with regard to the crime scene response?
I received training in proper documentation using sketches and diagrams of the scene. I also received training in trace collection at crime scenes, as well as gunshot residue collection at crime scenes.
Now, the crime lab that you work for, is that lab accredited?
Yes, it is.
And what does that, as far as accreditation, what does that mean?
Accreditation is a voluntary quality assurance process that the laboratory is a part of, or an outside body evaluates our crime lab to ensure that our personnel, procedures, and instruments are held to certain scientific standards.
And the outside sort of vendor or the outside accrediting agency, who is that in regard to the Massachusetts State Police Crime Lab?
Our laboratory is accredited by ANAB, which stands for ANSI, National Accreditation Board, and ANSI is another acronym that stands for National Standards American National Standards Institute.
And as far as that accreditation is concerned, how often is that something that that your lab undergoes, or is there a certain audit process? How is accreditation sort of achieved?
We are audited, I believe, I want to say every 2 years, but I'm not 100% sure. They come out to the lab and they go through certain systems or have a certain scope in which they audit us. We also do internal audits as well.
And as far as that accreditation is concerned, is that something that was up to date in the month of January of 2022?
Yes, it was.
And is it up to date currently as well?
Yes.
Now, your work, I believe you just alluded to this as far as your testimony, but does your work go through some sort of review process?
Yes, every assignment that I complete goes through both a technical review process and an administrative review process.
Can you explain a little bit about what each of those is and what it means?
A technical review process is done by an independent analyst, either a peer or a supervisor, who will look through my file and determine whether or not they can come to the same conclusions that I came to based on my notes.
Are you familiar, based on your training and experience within the lab, of something called a proficiency test?
Yes, I am.
And can you explain to the jury what is your understanding? What is a proficiency test?
Proficiency tests are given in the different types of analysis that we do at the lab to ensure that we are maintaining our competency in that type of analysis.
And about how often are these administered, or how often do you take proficiency tests?
For a biological fluid identification, I take 2 per year. For trace identification, I take 1 per year. And for crime scene response, I take 1 per year.
And these proficiency tests, are they required by the accrediting body, ANAB, that you were referring to?
Yes, they are.
And did you take a proficiency test in hair and fiber identification in 2022?
Yes, I did.
And what was the outcome of that proficiency test?
That was successfully completed and required a remediation.
And can you explain to the jury what remediation is and why this specific proficiency test required remediation?
A remediation occurs when you have an inconsistent answer with that is expected by the laboratory or by the test provider. In this particular instance, I had an inconsistent answer with the expected laboratory result.
And how was the remediation completed in this instance?
After the inconsistent answer was identified by my technical leader, we had a verbal discussion about why I came to the conclusion I did. To be more specific, each item had 2 samples. One of the samples for item 4, I determined as being a human hair without a root, when in fact the root was present. We had a discussion on how I came to that conclusion, and then she then mounted that hair back on the microscope, and we discussed different ways that I could have come to the correct conclusion.
And during that remediation process, were you permitted to continue to perform casework during that time?
Yes, I was. I was permitted to continue to perform casework in hair and fiber identification. However, I was temporarily asked to not perform technical reviews of my peers' work on hair and fiber identification.
And was prior casework that you had completed evaluated to verify that the previous reports were issued correctly?
Yes, they were.
And what was the determination in regard to that?
No previous casework was affected by this error.
And have you since completed additional proficiency tests in hair and fiber identification?
Yes, I did.
And what were the outcomes of those subsequent proficiency tests?
Those were successfully completed without needing any additional remediation.
As far as the remediation was concerned, if you could just explain to the jury sort of what the issue was and what that remediation process looked like again.
Sure. So I received 4 items in hair and fiber identification. Each item was told that they came from the same source. Item number 4 consisted of 2 items. One was a hair with a root. The other was also a human hair with a root, but I had said the root was absent. That was due to the fact that I didn't see anything like that in the microscope. It was something that was new to me. My technical leader reviewed that hair with me under the microscope. She showed me various characteristics, such as a loss of scale pattern and the soft appearance of the root, which I thought was damage. Because we had this discussion and I agreed with the different characteristics that she showed me, she then gave me several hairs, both with damage and with roots, so that I could basically continue to understand the difference of what I was looking at. Once she looked at all my notes and agreed with everything that I had done, she then issued me an additional test to demonstrate my continued competency in this.
Now, how many criminalistics cases have you processed over your time at the lab?
Over 1,000.
And how many scenes have you processed in regard to your work with the crime scene response unit?
I responded to approximately 150 scenes, 80 of which I was the lead investigator on.
And how many exams have you completed with regard to motor vehicles?
Approximately 65.
Now, if I could ask just a general question as far as blood testing is concerned, how is it that you test for blood?
Normally, I would test for blood by locating a visible red-brown stain or an area that may contain blood. I perform a screening test, which is not specific to blood, but other items may also come up positive for screening tests. If that screening test is positive, I go on to perform a confirmatory test.
And as far as the screening test is concerned, can you explain to the jury sort of what it is that you do in performing that screening test?
The screening test is a two-step process. I take a cotton swab, which I apply sterile water to. I take that cotton swab and apply it to the area that I would like to test. And then I add my two chemicals to the swab. Depending on what type of screening test I perform, there'll be a color change, either blue or pink, for blood.
And with regard to the confirmatory test, can you explain to the jury sort of what does that consist of?
If the screening test is positive, I'll go on to perform a confirmatory test, or again, a cotton swab is applied to the area of interest, or I may take a cutting depending on what the substance is. I then add a chemical to that cutting or swab, and then the liquid portion is added to a test card, something similar to a coded, if you've taken a COVID test or a pregnancy test, the liquid is spotted at one end of the card and it flows up the strip. If there's two lines, it's positive. If there's one line, it's negative.
And through your training experience and work with the lab, are you familiar with a term called QLIM or QLIM?
Yes, I am.
And can you explain to the jury what QLIM means or how it's applied to you?
QLIM stands for quantity limited, which means that the sample, if it's being sent forward to DNA, would not be able to be divided in two. Typically, we divide each sample going forward to DNA into two, one to be tested in our DNA unit and one to be preserved for future testing. If an item is deemed QLIM, it means that the entire item will be used up in the DNA processing.
Now, Ms. Hardin, if I could turn your attention to February 2nd, 2022. Do you recall that date?
Yes, I do.
And on that date, were you dispatched to the Canton Police Department?
Yes, I was.
And do you recall approximately what time of day it was that you arrived at the Canton Police Department?
I believe it was approximately 9 a.m.
And when you arrived there, who, if anyone, beyond yourself from state police or other sort of personnel was present at the Canton Police?
Trooper Proctor, Trooper Dunn, and Trooper Clark from Crime Scene Services Unit.
And at some point subsequent to that, were there other members of the state police that arrived in that area as well?
Yes.
And was one of them a reconstructionist named Trooper Paul?
I'm not sure what the name was. I do know that the reconstruction team did come on after I arrived.
Now, where within the Canton Police Department were you directed to go, or where did you go?
I was directed to the Canton Police Department garage.
And when you got to the garage, what specifically did you observe there, and what, if anything, were you asked to do?
I was asked to examine a black Lexus SUV.
And did you then examine that black Lexus SUV?
Yes, I did.
And you made certain observations of that, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Now, with respect to your observations that you made of the black Lexus SUV, was that memorialized in any way?
Yes, I took notes as I was examining it.
And you mentioned Trooper Clark as well, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
And is he from the Crime Scene Services section within the State Police Lab?
Yes.
And what, if anything, was he doing with reference to the black Lexus while you were making your observations or while you were conducting your work?
I believe he was taking photographs. I don't know any other, I don't know what else he performed while he was there.
And Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
I'm showing you a three-page document just asking to look at the company of French. Do you recognize that document, ma'am?
Yes.
What do you recognize it to be?
It's. It looks like diagrams that I had taken at the scene. However, it appears to be missing some information.
So as far as the notes that you took, they're not memorialized?
If you could stand at the podium, please. Thank you.
Ms. Harden, you had taken notes on those diagrams when you were at the Kent police station in the garage?
Yes, I did.
And that diagram that you have before you does not contain those notes, is that correct?
That's correct.
But as far as the diagrams that you had before you and that you were taking notes on, those are the diagrams or a form of those diagrams?
Yes, that's correct.
And contained on that is certain information related to the vehicle, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Who's the make, the model, license plate number, is that correct?
Yes.
And if you could just read from that form as far as what you recorded as far as the make, the model, and the license plate number.
The make is a Lexus. The model is LX570. The year was 2021. The registration is Massachusetts 3GC684. The VIN number is JTJFY7AX1M434347. The exterior color is black. The interior color is tan. The registrant is Karen Reed. And the exam location was Canton PD Garage.
Can I approach you in, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm also seeking to introduce an admitted.
Any objection?
No objection.
Thank you.
Exhibit 137.
Thank you.
Now, Ms. Hardnett, with reference to the diagram that you took that you took notes on, do you have a copy of that with you today?
Yes, I do.
And Your Honor, with the court's permission, I would ask that the witness be allowed to take that out just to as far as the testimony related to the diagram.
Okay.
And with the court's permission as well, I would ask if we could display what's now been marked as 137 on the screen.
Yes.
And Ms. Hartnett, before you, I believe, on that desk in front of you, there should be a laser pointer.
Yes.
Just click on the button there and point it at the screen if I or anyone asks you to do so with reference to the screen. So, Ms. Hartnett, with reference to what's up on the screen, the top of that first page of the diagrams, if you could, using that laser pointer, direct the jury's attention to what you observed and what, if anything, you made note of. In reference to your observations of the black Lexus on February 7th.
Okay. In my notes, I had the vehicle was in overall good condition, and there was damage noted on the rear passenger side area. So that's not viewable in this particular diagram.
And this gentleman, if you could scroll down to the bottom.
So in this area here.
And as far as the damage that you noted in the right rear passenger area, what was it specifically that you noted?
I noted there was a dent.
Yeah, don't read from there. What did you note?
There was a dent in the trunk door. There were scratches on the rear bumper, and there was a broken taillight.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have the next page, please. Now, from the diagrams that are up on the screen right now, page 2 of what's been marked as 137, if you could, using that laser pointer, direct your attention to each of those observations you made and where they were in relation to the diagram. Yes.
The damage to the dent, the rear door was in this area, the broken tail light was here, and then there were some scratches on the rear bumper as well.
Now, in addition to scratches on the rear bumper on the area of that lift gate in the back, what, if anything else, did you observe sort of within that area of the bumper?
I observed an apparent hair on the rear quarter panel about here, and I also noted some pieces of glass on the rear bumper. Excuse me, I want to say apparent pieces of glass.
Now, as far as that word, when you say apparent human hair on the rear bumper, why that terminology? Why do you call it that at that stage when you're in the garage and you're making these observations?
At that time, I noted that it was an apparent hair because I had not done any microscopic observation of the hair.
And subsequent to that, did you do that microscopic examination of the hair that you observed in the rear area of that Lexus SUV?
Yes, I did.
And where was that performed?
That was performed back at the lab.
So that item was secured by yourself, taken back to the lab, and examined microscopically?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, with reference to what you termed as the apparent glass on the rear bumper, similar to the apparent hair, why is it that you use that terminology when you're making those observations of it in the garage?
I did not have any confirmation that it was glass. We refer to it as apparent glass and preserve it for the trace unit.
And when you say reserve it for the trace unit, if you could, just in general terms, describe to the jury what the trace unit is and what is it that they do as far as their analysis in relation to what you do.
Certain items will be examined in the trace unit for identification. So the criminalistics unit does not perform glass identification. That would be done in the trace unit. They would also, they also will look at other items such as plastic and hairs, but I'm not comfortable going into the analysis that they perform. I don't have the details on that.
And lastly, Ms. Gilman, if I could have the third diagram within that. And again, Ms. Hartnett, what's up on the screen is that would be before you as the third diagram?
Yes.
Or the third page of the diagram. And what, if anything, of significance did you note in this area of the diagram?
I noted the items that were located within the vehicle. There were some boxes on the back seat of the vehicle. There was also a package in the vehicle and some clothing and miscellaneous items in the trunk.
Now, as far as the items that were contained within the trunk, how high up were they? Let me ask you this. As far as the rear window of the trunk area, was there anything obstructing that?
I don't recall at this time.
Thank you. Ms. Gunner, you can take that down. May I approach again, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm going to show you initially a set of 18 photographs, just asking to generally look at those, and I'm just going to ask you, generally speaking, if you recognize what is contained there. Ma'am, do you, generally speaking, do you recognize what's depicted in those photographs?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize those to be?
These are photographs of the black Lexus SUV that I examined at the Canton Police Department.
And what's contained in those photographs, is that a fair and accurate portrayal of what you observed as far as the black Lexus on that date of February 2nd?
Yes.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
I'll want to see if you excuse me in the minutes of the next exhibits.
No objection.
Your Honor, if I may, I don't mean to...
So Madam Court Reporter needs to...
I understand. So all I'm asking, Your Honor, is if I may approach just to show a couple more photographs while the court reporter is recording so that the witness may review them.
Okay.
Are we done?
If anyone speaks before I'm done, it won't be on the record.
Thank you very much.
You could have him speak up.
Your Honor, with court.
So, Mr. Lally, you really need to keep your voice up and the witnesses.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, with the court's permission, may I publish those photographs that have now been marked for the jury?
Yes.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could start with 2498. Ms. Hartnett, you recognize what's up on the screen?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize that to be?
That is a picture of the license plate of the black Lexus SUV.
And if I could have the next photograph, Ms. Gilman, 2499. Again, do you recognize what's up on the screen, Ms. Hartnett?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize that to be?
That is the front end of the Lexus SUV.
And Ms. Gilman, next photograph, 2500. And again, do you recognize what's up on the screen as this exhibit 140?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize within this photo?
It's the exterior of the Lexus SUV.
And as far as this is inside of the garage at the Canton Police Station, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
In addition to the vehicle, is this a fair and accurate portrayal of what the inside of the garage looked like when you were there that day on February 2nd?
Yes.
And if I could have the next photograph, Ms. Gilman, 2501. And again, do you recognize what's up on the screen, ma'am?
Yes, I do.
And which part of the vehicle are we looking at in this photograph?
Looks like the front passenger side of the Lexus SUV.
And the next photograph, Ms. Gilman, 2502. And do you recognize what's depicted in this photograph as well?
Yes.
And which side of the vehicle are we looking at this point?
The driver's side.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have 2505. And do you recognize what's in this photograph, Ms. Hartnett?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize this to be?
That's the rear driver's side of the black Lexus SUV.
And the next photograph, Ms. Gilman, 2506. you recognize this as well?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize this?
That's the rear of the Black Lexus SUV.
As far as the caution tape that's up and around the vehicle, is that something that was around the vehicle at the time that you first came into the garage?
Yes, it was.
Now, from this photograph 2506, which is exhibit 145, using the laser pointer before you, if you could draw the jury's attention to the damage that you're talking about or where you observed that located on the vehicle.
There's damage here on the bumper, and there was also damage to the rear door. I think it may be blocked by the caution tape.
And Ms. Newman, if I could have photograph 2508. So looking now at what's been marked, exhibit 147. Ms. Newman, if I could ask you to zoom in a little. Now, with reference to the damage that you were talking about that may have been blocked by the caution tape in the prior exhibit, do you see that in this exhibit?
Yes, I do.
And if you could, again, using the laser pointer, before you draw the jury's attention to where in this exhibit you observed that damage.
Right here. It's on the rear door, right underneath the window.
Now, Ms. Hartman, as far as crime machine response is concerned, when you're doing this kind of examination of a motor vehicle, can you explain to the jury sort of what that process entails and what is it that you're doing over the course of your examination?
I complete an overall visual examination of the vehicle, noting any damage or anything that stands out that should be recorded. I then look for any stains or material that is on the vehicle, specifically any transfer that could have been left behind by a victim.
And as far as making those observations, what, if anything, do you then do with regard to those observations that you made from the visual inspection?
I'll then perform testing on any stains that I note or any areas of interest, and then collect anything that needs to be collected.
Now, with respect to this vehicle and this examination, what is exactly that you were requested to examine?
I was informed that this vehicle may have been involved in a hit and run, so I was requested to examine it for biological material.
And what, if any, information were you given upon arrival to the Canton Police Department in regard to that vehicle?
I was informed that the victim had scratches on his arm, as well as the fact that the car had been towed through a blizzard.
And did you perform any testing with relation to the vehicle?
Yes, I did.
And what was that testing that you performed?
I performed blood screening on the lower lying areas of the undercarriage, on each side of the tire flap, as well as the edge of the bumper and the exhaust pipe.
And what were the results of that testing that you performed there in the garage?
Those were negative.
And what, if any, evidence did you collect while you were either from the vehicle or from any other source while you were at the Canton Police Station that day?
I collected the apparent glass from the rear bumper. I collected a paint standard from the area of damage on the rear door. I also collected a paint standard from the area of damage on the rear bumper, as well as the apparent hair from the rear quarter panel. And I collected the taillight housing from the vehicle.
And turning away from that just for a moment, Ms. Gilman, if I could ask for photograph 2512. And Ms. Hartman, direct your attention up on the screen what's been now been marked as exhibit 150. Do you recognize this?
Yes, I do.
And what, if anything, of significance in relation to items collected or items that you observed, do you observe in this particular photo?
I observed the apparent glass on the rear bumper.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2515. And again, up on the screen, what's now been marked as exhibit 153, do you recognize this?
Yes, I do.
Now, as far as that area that you were talking about where you recovered, which you termed initially in the garage, as an apparent human hair, do you see the location of that within this photograph?
Is it possible to zoom in a little bit on the area right next to the rear tail light?
Come in if you could.
To the best of my recollection, it was in this area.
Now, as far as areas where you observe certain items or where damage is indicated or observed by you, is that later marked in some fashion?
I note the damage in my notes.
But as far as on the physical item itself, is that marked in any way, shape, or form?
Yes, I'll use stickers to indicate areas that I would then refer to back in my notes.
So that second set of photographs that I placed before you when the stenographer was marking those exhibits, do you generally recognize what's depicted in those photographs?
Yes.
What do you recognize those?
These are pictures of the interior of the black Lexus SUV.
May I approach, Ron?
Yes.
Your Honor, the following will seek to introduce in a minute.
Please.
There's four photographs as the next exhibit.
Is there an objection, Mr. Jackson?
No objection, Mr. Jackson.
I'll take those. Thank you very much. And Your Honor, with the court's permission, I would ask to publish those for the jury as well.
Okay.
I'm just going to invite you out photograph 2521. It's hard to, again, direct your attention to the screen. Do you recognize what's now been marked as Exhibit 156?
Yes.
What do you recognize that to be?
That's the driver compartment of the black Lexus SUV.
And if I could have this gentleman photograph 2527.
Your Honor, may I have just a moment with counsel?
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate it.
So, Ms. Hart, direct your attention to the screen, photograph 2527, that's now been marked as Exhibit 157. Do you recognize that as well?
Yes, I do.
And what is depicted in that photograph, ma'am?
It's the front seat area of the black Lexus SUV.
And specifically, as far as the center console area of that vehicle, is that fair and accurate portrayal of what you observed inside the vehicle on February 2nd?
Yes.
And lastly, from this packet, Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2535. And Ms. Hardnett, 2535, which has now been marked as Exhibit 159. Do you recognize what's up on the screen there?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize that to be?
That's the interior of the trunk of the black Lexus SUV.
And is that a fair and accurate portrayal of the interior of the trunk as you observed it in the Canton Police Department garage on February 2nd?
Yes.
Thank you. Can I approach the witness again, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm showing another series of nine photographs. Again, just ask you to look at those and look up when you're finished. But really, what I'm going to ask you is, do you recognize what's depicted in those? Do you recognize what's depicted in those photographs, ma'am?
Yes, I do.
And generally speaking, what's depicted in those nine, that set of nine there?
These are pictures of the rear passenger area of the black Lexus.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
I'm also seeking to introduce and admit as the next nine exhibits.
Is there any objection, Mr. Jackson?
None, Your Honor. Thank you.
Well, you really have to keep your voice up.
I'm sorry?
You really have to keep your voice up.
I apologize, Your Honor. Thank you very much. Your Honor, with the court's permission, may I publish portions of this for the jury as well?
Okay.
Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2539. Ms. Hardy, what's up on the screen is photograph 2539. That's now been marked as Exhibit 160. Do you recognize that?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize that to be?
That's the rear passenger area of the black Lexus.
Now, as far as the damage that you observed from the broken taillight, if you could, using the laser pointer before you, direct the jury's attention to that or what's visible of that in this photograph.
This area here is the broken taillight.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have the next photograph, 2540. Now Exhibit 161. Again, Ms. Hartnett, if you could, using that laser pointer, direct the jury's attention to where you observe, if anywhere in this photograph, damage to the right rear passenger tail.
There's damage in this area here to the rear taillight.
From the damage that you observed, it essentially wraps around from both the back and from the passenger side of the vehicle. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2554. And Ms. Hartnett, do you recognize what's up on the screen as photograph 2554, Exhibit 165?
Yes, I do.
And you were talking before, earlier in your testimony, about some stickers or some sort of evidentiary marker that you would put on an item that you're examining, correct?
Correct.
And do you see any of that in this photograph here?
Yes, I do.
And could you direct the jury's attention using a laser pointer to where you observe that and what if any area of damage or what that's to note?
There's a sticker here, and I know you can't see it. I don't know if you can zoom in. There's a letter on the sticker, I believe it's A, that denotes that there's something there that I was going to collect. And right next to that sticker here is the apparent hair that I noticed.
Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2558. My apologies, 2556. And similarly, Ms. Hartnett, do you recognize anything in this photograph in regard to something that you had marked?
Yes, that's the rear bumper of the SUV.
And Ms. Gilman, if you could zoom in a little on that black. Okay. And Ms. Hartnett, in this photograph, what, if anything, is depicted that you denoted something sort of black or further examined at a later?
There is pieces of apparent glass here on the bumper.
Can I approach the witness again, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm showing you another series of four photographs. If you could just look those up on your pen. Do you recognize what's depicted in those photographs, ma'am?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize those to be?
This is the rear passenger exterior, right below the taillight on the Lexus SUV.
And, Your Honor, may I approach the witness?
Yes.
Commonwealth Chief of Police is an excellent exhibit.
No objection.
Your Honor, with the court's permission, may I publish some of these photographs to the jury?
Yes.
Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2573. Sergeant, again, photograph 2573, what's now marked as exhibit 169, and recognize what's depicted in this?
Yes, I do.
And if you could explain to the jury sort of what we're looking at in this photograph?
This is the area of the rear passenger side of the vehicle just below the taillight.
And Ms. Gilman, if I get past sort of towards the top center of that photograph, if you could zoom in on that area. Ms. Hartnett, do you observe another sticker or placard that you place in that area?
Yes, I do.
And what, if anything, is that in reference to?
I'm sorry, I can't see what the letter is on it, so I'm not sure what that's in reference to.
If I could ask Ms. Gilman.
So, Ms. Delally, when you put your head down to read, your voice goes down considerably. We can't get a recording of your voice, so you need to speak up.
Understood, Your Honor.
Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2576.
And Ms. Gilman, if you could, with reference to the two areas up on that, if you could zoom in that area. I'm sorry, first on the one below. Ms. Hartnett, can you see better there as far as what the sticker is and what you had noted there?
Yes.
And can you explain to the jury what you had noted in that particular area?
I noted there were scratches in that area.
And Ms. Gilman, if you could, the one above. Thank you. Also, within this exhibit 172, there's another sticker further upward on the vehicle. What, if anything, did you denote or observe in that particular area?
In that area, I noted the apparent hair.
May I approach the witness again, Your Honor?
Yes.
Another series of photographs of this asking the same question. If you could
take a look at those and asking if you recognize apparently what they are.
Next question, Mr. Lally.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. May I approach?
Yes.
I'm going to call what's introduced in a minute as the next exhibit.
No objection.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Your Honor, with the court's permission, I'd ask to publish some of those photographs to the jury as well.
Yes.
Ms. Gilman, if I could have 2558. Okay, Ms. Harden, do you recognize what's contained in photograph 2558, exhibit 173?
Yes, I do.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could ask you to just zoom in a bit on the sticker in the middle of the screen. And again, Ms. Harden, what is depicted in this photograph?
That is a picture of the apparent hair I noted in the area.
Gilman, if I could have 2561. And for the record, this is exhibit 176. Ms. Gilman, if I could ask you to zoom in a bit on the sticker in the middle there. Ms. Harden, do you recognize what's depicted in this exhibit?
Yes, I do.
What do you recognize that to be?
That's the damage I noted on the rear door.
Your Honor, may I approach
yes.
the witness? I'm showing you a series of three photographs. Those are the ones we finished. And do you recognize those, ma'am?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize those to be?
These are photos that I took of the taillight housing back at the lab.
And what's contained in that, those three photographs, is that a fair and accurate portrayal of the taillight housing once you had removed it and taken it back to the lab?
Yes.
May I approach again, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm off the seat to introduce the minutes and exit
No objection.
Thank you.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.